Welcome to Woman in Comedy, the podcast with your hosts, Jasmine Langdon and
Tal.
Tal and Jasmine Langdon and Tal.
And that is our guest in the background, who's very, very keen to be intro. So without further ado, this is we have Julia Wilson here for our first episode.
I feel like there should be rounds of applause or something. I mean,
yay!
Can you hear that, like, dropped in? In fact, it's just the three of us sitting here chatting.
Yeah, and we have no intro music, but hey, we don't need it. You know, maybe later.
We'll have to get someone to write something for you.
We shall see. Do you know someone?
I always know a guy.
About that, shall we say?
Well, it's not the Slutty Women in Comedy podcast, it's just Women in Comedy podcast.
All right. Now, Julia is known as the Queen of Sydney Comedy.
I don't know where that came from. I think that's quite recent. Because I don't know that I am. I don't know that I've ever been the queen of anything ever, to be fair.
Well, everyone's been calling you that.
Yeah, I saw that I was posted as in one of the gigs last week, the Queen of Sydney Comedy, and I went, oh.
Was that the one at
Leary?
Yeah. I could quite possibly be the king because I'm really blokey, but the queen sounds very feminine, and I'm just not. Maybe the jousting master or something of Sydney Comedy or something. It just made me giggle. I was like, I'm the queen of something. And it's not bitch. That's lovely. That's the only other time I've ever been described as a queen. She's a queen bitch, that one.
You're a busy working comedian.
Yeah. Geez, I've been flat stick this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about your gigs recently.
So this weekend I did Thursday night. I did the Comedy Store in Sydney, which is at Fox Studios. And then I legged it over to, literally came off stage, bust out through the fire exit because I couldn't get back through the room, downstairs into my car, and which was illegally parked. Because if you're going to park in the big parking station, that's 10 minutes added on because nothing ever works fast when you're in a hurry. So into my car, out to Parramatta, gigged there, back home, next night, Comedy Store, and then I had tickets to see one of my favourite bands, Lisa Hunt. I don't know if you've ever seen her. She has an amazing voice. And just all like Motown soul funk stuff.
Nice.
Which just, you know, when you got a bit of energy to burn off, you have got to cut a rug to that. That was unreal. So I legged it back to the Northern Beaches for that. And then Saturday night I did the Comedy Store and then legged it to Rudy Hill RSL, which is about 45 Ks away from, from the Comedy Store. So just hoofed it.
And then made it to our podcast. If you had a bit of trouble with the traffic, though.
There's always Sydney roads. I don't know how international your comedy listening people are, but Sydney roads are just shit. It just doesn't matter what time of the day it is. We are too big a city for our infrastructure, and no matter where, if I'm on my motorbike, fine, I can just zip up the inside. Massively illegal, but I get to where I'm going on time. But on days like today, where I've had not enough sleep and my eyes are puffy and I've had too much makeup on for too many days in a row and my eyes hurt and I could use extra sleep, I'm not going to trust myself on a motorbike.
Yeah, no.
I could quite possibly wrap myself around a telegraph pole.
Well, hopefully the cup of tea is kicked in.
You watch me
high quality tea, vegan cookies, for anyone
who's interested
in being a guest.
So hard. If there's not red jelly babies that are headless in the green room, I won't go on. Or vegan cookies.
They are pretty good, and I never used to bake. It's only recent.
Look at you go, you baker.
Yeah, I've got really domestic since I moved to the burbs.
So you mentioned like different places that you've performed at. Do you find the audience is pretty different?
The vibe's always different. Yeah. So, you know, the jokes are the jokes, and I've kind of got stories from when I was a bouncer, and I've got stories from being on the road, and I've got stories, you know, different. So I kind of suss out. I've got a couple little jokes at the very top that I work out, okay, if they laugh at that, they're going to like this stuff, and if they don't laugh at that, then they're probably going to like this other stuff. And, you know, there's a couple, I call them my litmus paper tests.
Right, so you get a feel for it.
Yeah, we sort of go, oh, good, okay, proceed, and that sort of thing. Because there are some times you go for something, and you're really committed to, like, a seven-minute bit, and the audience is just like, nah, not digging it, move on, big girl. And you're sort of like, okay, I was really invested. How do I extract myself out of this conversation? And then get into something else, you know, that sort of things like that. So I've designed a set, so I've got a couple little, just in the opening, I kind of open with the same, you know, minute and a half, just because to explain who I am, because I'm a bit unusual.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about yourself.
Well, when I say unusual, I'm really, so obviously I've just mentioned I'm quite blokey and I ride a motorbike and I play full contact gridiron and I used to be a bouncer. So I'm really kind of loud and capable, and for some reason people assume that to be a lesbian trait, so I'm always being asked if I'm a lesbian, which I'm really impressed with, because that just makes it sound like I'm super handy at everything. My lesbian mates are so bloody capable of everything. I go, fuck yeah, except that I'm a giant slutty whore McHorebag, so I can't, like, I would get kicked out of a lesbian club in a heartbeat. Like, they'd just, they'd have me on board for being able to change oil filters and cars and stuff, but then would go, sorry, you've sucked too many cocks, you're out. So, that's how that would go. So but I have to address that on stage, otherwise I actually genuinely hear people going, I think she's a lesbian. Like, I can actually hear them talking amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Especially when I mention, you know, being a bouncer, or I mention the gridiron or anything like that, you see them go, oh, laser? I don't know. Like, man, it's like the jokes are going to go over any better or worse depending on what sex I would prefer to have sex with. You know, it's just, it's kind of, it's a weird thing. So if I don't just, you know, nail it straight off and just go, this is what I am, this is who I am. So I introduce myself as a tomboy that grew up into a tom man. That's how I introduce myself.
Yeah.
So people go, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And it's nice clearing things up, so in the case you might get hit on after you...
Do you know what? When I didn't clear it up and everyone thought I was a lesbian, I got hit on by dudes and chicks all the time.
Wow.
All the time. And now when I say I'm straight, I get hit on by lesbians all the time and not very often guys, which doesn't make any sense.
No, that doesn't. They like the challenge. You're like, oh, come on, deep down, she's lying.
Yeah.
She's lying. She's...
But what makes me laugh is that the lesbians say the same thing. Come on, like, I do 25 minutes of cock jokes and then lesbians be like... So you're not really straight though, are you? When I go, did you hear any of the words I said when I was on stage? Because most of them were cock. Like, that's...
They thought it was a joke.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It's like, you're the whole thing. And I was like, that's real. I'm really committed to that bit, if that's the case.
So for anyone who's a sensitive listener... And,
oh, yeah. I'm
going to
swear
again. Yeah, yeah. This is R18, so feel free to turn off now.
Sorry about that. It's a bit little delicate.
No,
my folks can hack it, you can hack it.
Now, on Thursday, you, me, and Peter Mizell, who's probably listening to this. Hi, Pete. Yes, we might get you on at some point, even though you do not have a vagina. Fair enough.
To be fair.
You know.
We don't know that.
We were at the Oakley having our little writers' meeting, and I overheard you saying, I'm lovely! And then I cracked up laughing.
At the top of her voice, like she laughed from the other side of the pub. Just like,
dude. Can you explain why you say that? Why would people not think you're lovely? Because I know you well, and I know you are lovely, but why would people not think
because
that?
Because people assume with the, you know, how I talk and how I am and how loud I am. Sometimes I could not be as lovely as I am. So I have to say regularly, I'm fucking lovely. Why? Where does this come from?
The swearing probably does.
Yeah, well, it's because, to be fair, he was trying to take my piece of cake and I was going to stab him. And when he made this, like, I made a very quick gesture to him, the face that he pulled of like, ah! He actually thought I was going to go in, but I went, I'm lovely, I wouldn't stab you over a piece of cake. Just the one piece of cake, maybe the whole
cake. It was good cake, though.
It was great cake.
It was really good cake.
Oakley do good cake.
They do. So we have some pre-prepared questions for you. Ah, yes, we're very, very organised. Well, you recently changed your name on Facebook to Julia Wilson.
Yes.
Well, as in sheep.
Yeah, and there was no New Zealand reference there at all.
Oh,
I just, every now and then I get a little bit stalked. So I just, which is hilarious if you know me. I'm 5'8", I'm 100 kilos. And I could punch the bejesus out of most people that I know. So I'm like, if you're going to stalk someone, maybe pick someone a little bit more victim-y. Maybe not the girl that's going to flog you in the street in front of everybody and then go, get up again, I swear to God, I'm going to kick you in the face. That kind of, you know, that's... So every now and then I just get kind of weird and I go, okay, time for a name change again.
Interesting that you say that. I've noticed there's a lot of comics, so some of which will probably be on this podcast in the future, who actually change their name or take the last letter of the first name and just alternate it.
Yeah,
because they're getting hassled by people. And to anyone who's listening to this podcast who is a comedy fan, we're not trying to say that you guys are stalkers. Most of you are very normal, very nice people. But there are a few people out there
like
just
2,000
don't
people.
Understand the difference between
boundaries.
A fan page. There's such thing as a Facebook fan page. Hey, even I have one and I'm not even famous. But I'm getting a few random people adding me on Facebook, and I'm like, hang on a sec, I'm not really well known. I don't know you. Stop adding. Follow the page. Like the page. Follow me on Twitter, because it's just weird.
Oh, I don't mind. I almost never maintain my website or my fan page, just because I'm a slack ass, to be fair. And when you're doing festival shows and you're getting the ticket price in your pocket, absolutely, market the hell out of yourself. But when I'm doing gigs... that's a lot of maintenance. So I just kind of, I do everything through my personal Facebook page. So I don't mind having people on there that have been to shows and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
But when they get weird about it, I go, ugh, you've got to go. That's, I mean, I've got a couple of thousand, I've got 2,000 people on Facebook, which is nothing compared to, you know, the big boys, but you know, you only need 1% of those people to be freaks, and you know, and we all know statistically more than 1% of the population are nutbags.
True.
And I seem to attract them.
Have you had someone stalk you to the point you need to get the cops involved?
Oh, only an ex-boyfriend.
Sounds like
and even then, I didn't get the cops involved. Even then, all my friends were going to call the police, and I just quietly took care of that myself.
So you're connected then?
I don't need to be. That's the joy of being me. I just go, you know what? Well, yeah, I just go... Because, you know, stalking is based on intimidation and fear. And I go, I don't scare that easy. Just, I dare you to be in my backyard at 4 o'clock in the morning. I dare you. See how it works out for you. Because I'm tipping. It's not going to be in the, you know, in stalker's favour. It'd be one of those stories where everyone reads it and goes, oh, good on that girl. I hope they don't charge her. That's how that would end. You know when you hear about those stories?
Yeah.
Well, I remember hearing Henry Rowland say that he was getting... Well, he didn't call it stalked, but pestered by someone, which by anyone else's definition would be stalked. And he just pulled the guy inside his fence line and beat the absolute shit out of him and then called the cops and said, oh,
wow,
there's an intruder. You should come and get him. This is like this bloody mess inside that.
Wow.
Like, it's kind of, you know, I'm not advocating violence much, but, you know, if you're gonna base your entire tactic on fear and intimidation, you can't get upset when someone beats the absolute shit out of you.
That's true. And it's very good for ladies to defend ourselves. Not to mention Peter Mysel again. He even got mentioned at the last podcast we recorded. Jeez, he's very popular. But yeah, he said to me, Jazz, you know that don't go to this area or that area or even the pub down the road from you. I won't disclose where, you know, where I live because that would be weird. But he said, you know, it's not an unsafe area, but don't go to that pub. And I said, but what if I had someone like Julia Wilson with me, for example? He said, oh, yeah, you could go anywhere. Yeah, she's a teacher. That's what I said.
That's very kind.
Personal bodyguard. It's like, oh, well, you'd be safe anywhere with Julia. That'd be fine. I mean, don't go on your own because I look so fragile and innocent, like I couldn't protect myself.
Yeah, that always makes me laugh when people assume those
I protected
things.
Myself once. I was in my early to mid 20s and I looked all frail and skinny and weak. And this guy kept on hitting on me. This guy, really horrible, really strong British accent. No offense to the British, but he's like, you know, I can shag you. And I was thinking, no, you're not attractive. Firstly, and you're really drunk. So I just was like, no thanks, mate. And politely kind of said, you know, go away. And then he kept on pushing it, and I don't know where the energy came from, but I pushed him, so he went flying across the table in a bar.
Nice work. Wow.
My friends were very impressed, although they did say next time that I went out with them, can you please not do that? That's really awkward, Jazz. I'm defending
security
myself.
Has to come, and then someone has to be thrown out.
He asked for it, man. I warned him like 3 times.
Yeah, I like the line. I remember it was in Roseanne. 150 million years ago, where Darlene, the daughter character, some guy's like sleazing onto her, and she just goes, any part of you that touches me, you don't get back. I'm like, that's a lovely, quiet, intimidating line.
That
you
is
just
a great
go,
line.
I think about it, Tiger. And they go, oh, that's not pleasant.
So, Julia, do you find like, because I've seen you perform a few times at Terrace Bar and also R&R.
With my delicate, quiet nature.
That's what I wanted to talk about. Do you find that your personality on stage and outside is pretty similar?
I was just having this conversation with a guy I'm spading where he's coming to see me in the next couple of weeks. And I had to say to him, when you see me on stage, you'll see personality traits that are similar, but on stage it's the very outer perimeter of my personality. And also the very outer perimeter of the personality from, you know, the last 20 years up until now. So,
yeah, what's more than exaggerated
person. Yeah. All those things have happened, and I have been that person. Mm. I'm not necessarily that person anymore because, you know, I was a doorman for 10 years and I haven't been a doorman for almost 15 now. So, you know, it's all still in, it's Julia of some sort of, you know, some version, but these days... You know, I do Buddhist meditation. And I try not to punch people in the face these days. You know,
you're more chilled out now.
I think I am. Yeah. I mean, I do have a medical thing where I make a lot of adrenaline, which I have come to love because I can't change it. But now I actually genuinely enjoy that I am kind of buzzing most of the time. It's completely drug-free, which always makes me giggle when I've got friends like, oh my God, coke is amazing. And I go, really? You should just try scaring the shit out of yourself all the time. It's great. So that side of things, I'm far more chilled out these days.
And the kind of work that you do outside of gigging, is a lot of time working with people with disabilities, isn't it, and caring for the elderly?
Yeah, so I've got a job with the Arts Health Institute where I go into aged care facilities and I do play-up performing for dementia patients. So I play, I know, don't I sound lovely? I'm lovely, this is what I have to say. Why is this such a fucking surprise? I'm lovely. I play ukulele and I sing, and obviously I don't bust out any of the cock jokes because it's seriously inappropriate. But yeah, that kind of, just, it's so much fun too. And they've shown that one of the problems as you age and dementia kicks in, a lot of people are medicated with antipsychotic drugs to keep them sort of, keep the agitation and the anxiety away. And depression as well, not that I think antipsychotics particularly work with the depression in the elderly, but so they found through this play-up program where you're literally just going in and being silly.
Yeah.
You're using props, you're singing, you're doing slapstick, you're just...
That would be very rewarding.
It's so much fun, so much fun. But they found that through that, you can reduce the medication. Yeah, you can actually bring them off their antipsychotics just through that one-on-one connection of being... big old dickhead. Like, it's so much.
Well, they say music helps, and you said you played
badly. Yeah, badly. And to be honest, every time, like, there's a couple of songs that I bust out all the time. You Are My Sunshine is one of them. Louis the Fly, because every old person knows Louis the Fly. What else do I sing? Burning Ring of Fire, they'll always sing along to. And I am the worst singer of all of those songs.
Have they complained?
No.
They love it.
Although there's one of my elders who just goes, "Are you tone deaf, Julia?" And I started to laugh. I went, "Nothing wrong with your hearing then." Yeah, so I do that, and I've also got a volunteer job where I take people who are housebound or elderly or infirm in some way, either go and do their shopping for them, or I take them to medical appointments, or you know, that sort of stuff. Where sometimes I just pick them up and take them shopping, so they still maintain their independence. See, lovely.
Yes, exactly.
They still maintain their independence, but they've just got me. And it's funny because all of them, every single person that I've taken shopping, and I've had this volunteer job for 7 years, every single one of them has said, "Do you know, I feel safe walking next to you?" Like, they get a hold of your arm, and they're just like, you know, "Oh, yeah, I feel very secure. I feel like you wouldn't let me fall." It always makes me laugh. Aww. That's, you know, that's a shock for them, that a volunteer who's coming to help is, you know, also basically bodyguard / you know, physical therapist. You know, they're kind of, "Come on, sweetie, let's go through here."
It's a perfect job for you.
And some of them are filthy dirty. Like, some of my elderly people, not the ones from, actually, no, even the ones in the dementia job, just the inhibitions are gone, and I guess you get to an age where you just go, like, fuck, and say whatever I feel like it. And they do, and I'm cacking myself. So in the volunteer job, I'm allowed to just piss myself laughing, whereas in the actual paid dementia job, I kind of have to, you know, pretend to be quite, pretend to be professional and go, "Oh, I must have misunderstood." I had one of the elders at the dementia job who spoke only Italian, and I don't speak Italian, but because I look Italian, she just was sure that it was only a matter of time until I would understand her. And so I had spent 10 minutes with her singing and doing, you know, over the top prop work, like really hack over the top prop work. And as I went to leave, she grabbed me and took me back into her room and showed me a photo of her and her husband from when they were about 16, and this lady's in her 80s.
Wow.
And she said, yeah, and I was kind of like, "Keep it together, Wilson, don't cry, like, this is, you know," because he's been dead for a million years. And she's, you know, she thinks that her son came to visit her yesterday, and he might have, or he might have been there for 18 months. You don't, you know, when you're in that sort of, that stage of dementia, you don't know. And so she's showing this photo of her and her husband, and in really broken English, she goes, "Before marriage, never in the front, only in the back." I know.
God.
And he's pointing Vag to us. I laughed.
Wow.
And I'm just like, and I'm trying to keep it together by not going, "You dirty old bitch." Like, I'm like, okay, thinking I can just try and blame the culture difference there and the language difference, but I was hacking myself. Like, I had tears. I kept it together, left her room, and then just broke into laughter out in the corridor. And I was like, "Oh!" And I had to really get it together before I went to see my next elder, because you're like, you can't tell the other elder that she said before marriage, in the front, only in the back. I was cagging myself. Things like that, you just go, that's a gem. Thank you, elders.
I'm going to
use that.
Yeah.
Now, you've travelled quite a bit. You even lived in the UK for some time.
Yeah, I was in the UK on and off for 5 years. That was fun.
Yeah.
And depressing.
Why was it depressing?
It's just a hard slog. You know, we have a different culture here. Everything's a lot easier. Over there, you have to queue for everything, and everything has to be filled out in triplicate. And without fail, someone will lose one of those triplicates. Then you have to start again. They're really, process and procedure is just ingrained in their culture. Whereas here, you know, Australia's only been colonised for 200 odd years, so we still have this, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, but I'll have a crack. Like, there's not a procedure for everything. So, you know, over there I just found myself going, ugh, why? Because that's how it's always done. But why? Well, I don't know.
Just the British sense of humour, just being really, really difficult.
No,
you're
actually,
Australian, I'm going to hassle you.
But the thing is, comedy relies on the fact that it's escapism. So the comedy's great over there because it's... it's a tough existence, you know, if you and the class system is really ingrained.
Oh, yeah.
So even if you're born the smartest kid in the world and you're lower class, you're almost never allowed to leave that class.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Even if you're really hardworking and you're smart and you're talented, you know, your own class will be like, you think you're better than us. Whereas here, we just kind of go, oh, fuck, good on you, Tiger, have a go. Like, we just have a different attitude towards stuff. So because comedy is an escapism, comedy goes really well over there because, you know, people have got pretty crappy lives.
Yeah.
Obviously not all of them. I'd hate for British people to listen to that and go, don't say I've got a crappy life, but everyone's got a tiny little apartment. There's no room to have people around to your place for dinner. So everyone meets at the pub. You know, it's dark a lot of the year. It's either really, really cold or really, really hot. You know, it's just, it's quite a hard existence compared to, you know, Australia where you're just kind of cruising around going, man, this is all right. This is, you know, comedy's okay here, but it's a bit more of a hobby for people to go to because... you know, we don't have much we need to escape from. We've got a pretty
good
current, you know, quality of life.
Never thought about it that way. I know a lot of Australian comics move over to the UK and they said it's easier to get paying gigs. There's a lot of gigs, but it seems like there's a lot of competition as well.
Yeah, yeah, there is. And South Africa is similar to, you know, they've got a pretty ordinary quality of life over there. So the gigs go really, really well. And it's, South Africa pays quite well. UK pays well when you, there's like three different circuits. So there's the top level... and then the middle levels, like all uni gigs and stuff like that, and then the bottom level, which is just horrible. that tends to be London based, where you're trying to do four gigs in a night or three gigs in a night, and you're zipping from one to the other, getting paid 20 quid here and 30 quid there, and you're just like, what am I doing? So when I first got there, I had to do that. And then I quickly went, fuck this. Jumped up to the uni circuit, and then finally got into the top circuit. But, and then I guess there's an even higher circuit than that, which is the TV work and that kind of stuff. But I didn't have a British passport, so it made... They've got their industry very well sewn up over there. So I could only perform on my performer's visa. I could only do work that had been written specifically for me, so obviously my own stand-up.
Yeah, okay.
So I couldn't go for TV commercials or voiceover work or anything.
That's very restrictive.
Yeah, because I had to prove why a British person didn't deserve that job over me or an Australian with a British passport.
Yeah.
And there was, you were allowed one... exemption to that rule. So if you landed a TV gig, then you could do, you know, but you then went, like, I got offered a couple of TV commercials, but I'm like, do I want to burn my one chance at a £500 TV commercial?
Yeah.
Or do I want to hold out and hope that I get something else? And so things like that, it's just, again, it's just fucking hard. You're just pushing up against it the whole time going, ugh. And, you know, things like that, it wears you down after a while. And, you know, you come home, I live on Manly Beach. I come home and go surfing most days. I go, oh, that's a little easier.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but it's... And unfortunately, in the Australian comedy circuit, you're not much good in the eyes of the promoters until you've worked overseas. I was the same comic.
Really?
Yeah, you just... It's hard to get booked, and then all of a sudden you're working in England and you're getting emails from home going, hey, let me know when you're coming back and we'll put you on. You go... I just left. I'm the same comic that I was. Just left last week. And you're emailing me going, oh, I see that you're playing, you know, South Africa, UK, and I don't know, like Croatia or Amsterdam or something like that. Oh, well, you better make sure you let us know when you're coming home.
Yeah, because you're an international comic
now. Exactly, exactly.
Well, do you find you have to adjust your jokes a bit when you're overseas?
Yeah, I did find, not so much in the UK, a little bit. There's words that will just ruin your set, like pants. Mean underpants in the UK, whereas in, you know, I'm trying to say trousers, and if I say pants, they will go, what? Like, you see completely, and you wouldn't think in a set that you would ever, like, oh, do I, if you'd asked me, I would have said I'd never say the word pants, but apparently pops up every now and then, and things like flip-flops versus thongs, which is G-strings versus, you know.
Yeah, that one will be tricky.
Yeah.
And the other one is I had to warn a friend of mine who came over from Australia, and he's Italian and uses the word wog a lot in his set, which in Australia is one of those things, especially if you're of ethnic descent, you're allowed to say wog. No one's going to go, hey, 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 hey. But over there, wog means gollywog, as in, and is as offensive as saying nigger or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really offensive phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had to say to him, dude, just don't. Like, you have to catch yourself because they will turn on you. They will, not only will you lose them, but they will actually turn on you.
Yeah, political correctness is
It's a pretty big deal.
Very big.
Especially on something like that, you know, you can sort of, political correctness can get out of control, but something like dropping the N-word, you just go, you just can't, you just cannot say that.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah, so things like that I would change for the UK, but in South Africa, I had to change the whole structure of my set because I sucked balls the first couple of nights that I was on stage and I just couldn't work out why.
Mm.
Like, these are good jokes, these are good stories, and they're international stories, so why aren't they getting the response? And then I worked out that the whole time I'd been on stage, I was just performing to people whose jaws were open, and they were just like, they were just so shocked at what I was talking about. I was like, this is really, because they just, it's a little bit better now, but when I first started going over there, they just didn't have women that talk like that. So I worked out that I had to restructure my set and kind of make it like an essay. So I would go out and tell them what I was going to talk about, just to get that shock factor out of the way, and then talk about it. And then at the end, I would kind of say what I'd already said, like I'd wind up like an essay. But it was hilarious because I just had to go out and go, hey, everyone, I'm an Australian female comic. So, you know, as an Australian, I'm going to swear like a fuckload. So if you don't mind, you should probably just fuck off. So, and that would get a laugh, but equally they would go, okay, so she's going to swear. And I'd say, and as an Australian female, we're quite sexually aggressive. You'd call us sluts, but we're fine with that because we're fucking your husband. And I would get another laugh. And then I would say, and also as an Australian female comic, some of the stuff I'm going to talk about tonight is about violence, because we're quite violent in a leave it on the football field, shake hands afterwards way, not in like a homicidal, genocidal way like you freaks are. And yeah, because we have to address the fact that they, violence over there, people die in the street. And but the thing is, was both of you went, ooh, all of them went, we really are. Like, and I would just go, what? Like, that would blow my mind.
Oh my God.
And so I'd say, okay, so now that we've worked out the swearing, the sluttiness, and the violence, let's get on with it. And I would go into my exact normal saying, you know, what you call, you know, your A set, 30 minutes of that. And at the end I'd go, okay, now what have we learned? We've learned that Australians swear a little bit and we suck a bit of cock, don't we? We also learned that we're violent, but not like you fucking weirdos. And they would be cacking themselves. And it was just like, so I just had to change how I gave it to them. Because I just died on my ass, and I was booked to do something like 20 nights straight. I thought, I can't die my ass 20 nights straight. My ego, whilst I have it mostly in check, will not handle 20 nights of tumbleweeds coming down the middle of the audience.
Yeah.
I just can't cope with that.
Oh, no one could. No one could. We were doing a little bit of research earlier.
Uh-oh.
No, this is fine. It's fine. You'll love it. Well, I think so.
Hello.
I mean, I've known you a couple of years, so I know enough, and I've seen you act a lot, but I thought, let's just see if there's anything that we might ask you about. Anyway, did you know that there is an Olympic athlete who's Australian?
I do.
You do know about
the
rower, Julia Wilson?
Yeah.
Do you know her personally?
I don't. No, I'm not in the Julia Wilson club.
Because you guys could start a special club. She's only a few years younger than you.
Yeah, and she was involved in that. Remember there was a, what do they call the four rowers? Whatever that particular...
A skull or something?
Yeah, but it's the chicks version. And one of them stopped rowing and they all turned on her. And it was like this big issue about bullying in Australian sport. And I don't know if Julia was the one who stopped rowing and they all attacked her, or if Julia was the bully, but I really distanced myself pretty fucking quickly away from that.
Yeah.
Did you know about the diction coach?
No.
There's Julia Wilson Dixon is a diction coach in Hollywood.
Oh.
And taught people like Mel Gibson to do Scottish accents in...
awesome, because you don't want to be... you don't mind being, you know, associated with her, you know?
Yeah, up is fine, down not so much.
I've done that. I've Googled myself or Facebook myself, see if there are any other Jasmine Langdons, and the only ones that I found were really cool. One of them was some African-American lady. So I go onto her page, and she's got this really powerful, like, pro-civil rights type stuff and all that other, you know, standing up for the man. And I was like, I like her. I want to be friends with her just because we have the same name. But that might be weird, and I'm not a stalker.
I had other Julia Wilsons friend me and go, hey, this, and one of them's like this diehard Christian from the States, like, hey,
whoa,
yeah, I see that we've got the same name and I can see that you're a performer, that's wonderful. And I went, you might want to Google me before you go any further. You just, I don't mind Christians. I tend not to be their poster child. They tend not to hold me up as, yeah, we love her. That's something that's happening in the last, I reckon, 2 months. People have started bringing their daughters along to shows.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, big uh-oh. They've started bringing their daughters along to shows because daughters want to meet me, and the parents think it's important to have a strong female role model. And I just go, I don't want to say you're bad parents, but I did a gig in down the South Coast a couple of weekends ago, mm-hmm. and there were two girls, 11 and 14, in the audience.
That's quite young. Yeah.
That's really young. And I get it in terms of me being a tomboy who grew into mm-hmm. a tom man. That's cool for a little girl to hear.
Yeah.
Possibly not the taking it up the arse and sucking cock. Maybe not those ones. Maybe don't let your daughter listen to that.
Yeah.
And I did say from the stage, I got the promoter to go over there and just say, hey, you know, this is going to be pretty full on. If you guys want your money back, you can go. Mm-hmm. And they went, no, we watch her on YouTube. We've come to watch her specifically. And I was like,
wow.
And so I went on, and when I went on stage again, because the thing is, it's not just the young kids that will get uncomfortable at some point, because I'm so full on stage. Like, I don't need to tell either of you two, but it's also the people around them. Same with the really, really old people in the audience. You know, they've lived a long time. They've got filthy little senses of humour as well, but it's the people around them that freak out that they're going to get offended.
Mm.
So you have to just address it from the top, where you go, hey, I've got... And in that same show, I had two women in their... one in their 80s and one in their 90s. And these two young girls. And so I said to the parents of the young girls, I did notice that we've got some young kids in the audience. And unless you want to answer the question, Mummy, how does a woman get three penises in her at once in the car on the way home, I reckon you should probably leave. And if you don't want to leave now, it's entirely up to you. But
you've been warned.
Yeah, but at some point in the night, if it gets too much, do me a favour and just go. Like, just quietly stand up and leave. You don't need to say anything to me. I'm not going to say anything to you. We all know it had to happen. Just, you know, just quietly go. And then I had to say, and look at these beautiful older ladies here. It's so nice to have you in the audience. And they always kind of, you know, you see, but you can see the audience around them just going, oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to laugh at really filthy stuff. Is that disrespectful to laugh when there's a woman who's in her 90s next to me? And I always go, so let's see, you would have been born in the 20s or 30s. So in the 60s, you were 30-ish. I reckon you've probably seen your fair share of action. I reckon you'd be fine with anything I say. And the women always go, yeah. So it's always, you know, you don't go to a comedy night when you're 90 by accident. Like, that's not, you didn't, I went to go and play the pokies, and somehow a comedian, you know, dragged me into the show. They've actively come here, so they know that it's going to be raunchy. They're not still going, oh, that lovely Sammy Davis Jr. is going to be on. Like, they know what's going on. It's everyone around them that gets freaked out. So you just have to address that. So that once the old person goes, go nuts, then everyone else around them goes, oh, phew. So I had a gig in Tunbridge Wells in London. Oh, years ago now, and when I went on stage, there was right in the middle of the room, and it was absolutely rammed, and right in the middle of the room was a group of about seven or eight, you know, those women that are just I describe them as too much, just too much fake tan, too many pearls and diamonds, too many twin sets, just too much. Like, they've clearly got money, and they're just wearing too much of everything.
Too much money, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and too much of them, really. And and as the comedians went on, these women just hated everybody, but in particular me with my Australian accent and my cocksucking, just fucking hated me. Like, really, just sitting there, all eight of them just glaring at me when I was on stage. But what started to happen was it started to be like this darkness in the middle of the room that started to spread out, because when people around them were laughing at me, as they meant to, like when they were laughing at me, no, as I'm telling jokes and they're laughing, these women would like shoot glances to the side, like, don't you dare laugh at that. And I went, I'm up there for 40 minutes, I'm going to have to address this, otherwise this is going to, either they're going to take the room or I'm going to take the room. But there's a real little power struggle. So I stopped halfway through a story and I just went, you guys aren't really digging me, are you? None of them wanted to make eye contact. They were just like, well, no, nothing to see here. And I said, now, come on, like, you're not enjoying it. I can see you're not enjoying it. But let's, you know, let's not pretend we haven't all had a cock in our mouth for over the time. And one of the women went, what? And I said, oh, what, bought all that jewellery yourself, did you? Like, come on, let's not pretend that we're not one and the same. I'm just more open about, you know, how much cock I suck. And they were livid, but everyone else around them cacked themselves laughing. And it just put up a nice little wall and kept the darkness and the horribleness in. Because it was going to spread right throughout the room. And I just went, I have to do it. So I was like I call it the comedy blue pill. Like, you got to set them out, round them up, and either fuck them off or just get them to sit there and be quiet until you're done. Because, you know, I don't expect everyone to like me, but I certainly don't want them to get in there and ruin my gig. So it's just this woman when I was like, come on, let's not all pretend we haven't all had a cock in our mouth at some point. She was just like, oh! It was just the most offensive thing I could have said to her.
Bit
of pain that day.
And of course, our listeners can't see this, obviously, being our listeners, but Julia's mouth went, open up pretty wide when she was describing that. So you can imagine this woman with her mouth wide and you know what you're thinking.
Yeah, they're pretty good diamonds, I've got to be fair. She had a lot of them. She was good at something. And to be fair, she didn't look that smart. So
there you go, yes. So I was going to talk about your style of comedy, but I think we've kind of established for this.
Yeah, we might have got
honest.
That.
Yes.
That's a really nice way. Honest. My acting agent describes me as a diamond in the rough, which I think is very nice.
Okay.
My mum describes me as spirited. I think that's the nicest. That's if they didn't like me, they'd be like, she's a mole, and she's bloody rough as guts. But because they're trying to see the nicer side of me, because I am in fact lovely, they go with diamond in the rough.
Oh, that's funny. What advice would you give new comics starting out, male, female, doesn't matter, we don't discriminate?
Find out who you are and be that. There's nothing worse than you can see people on stage, you're like, oh, you really like Ross Noble, or you really like blah blah. And I appreciate that when you listen to a lot of comedy you start to kind of mimic intonations and stuff like that, but just be who you are. Because it won't work if you're... An audience can sniff a fake a mile off. That's one thing from being a bouncer that I learned. I used to watch mosh pits when bands would come on. And a band that would crank it out a song that they wrote that they loved, the audience would go nuts for. But when that same band would do the hit off the radio that they wrote because it was going to sell records, the audience, you could just see the audience going... Ugh. And not because it was a popular song, but it didn't feel genuine.
Mm-hmm.
So the audience just go, nah. If you write a joke because you think it's going to be funny, as opposed to writing a joke you think is funny, the audience just sniffs it a mile off. So yeah, find out who you are and be that. Don't be held back by... I hear a lot of female comics going, oh, it's harder for us, and I just don't think it is. And I
don't agree with
that. Yeah, me either. And I hear a lot of, sort of middle-class white guys going, there's so many middle-class white comics, it's harder for us. And I'm like, you know what? No booker has ever gone, that person's really funny, but I've got too many blah, blah, blah on the bill. Like, if you're funny, you're on the bill.
Exactly.
Because it's a business. They want people to come back. They want them to laugh.
Mm.
And it's just that simple. So
sure.
I always go, just be the most of you can be.
Yeah.
And don't try to be anyone else, because it just won't work.
Yeah. What do you think puts most comedians off when they're starting out?
It's such a kick to the ego when you don't do well. It is such a kick up the ass. Like, I've had gigs where you go home and go, I'm climbing under my doona and I'm never coming out. I'm never, ever, ever coming out. And when I look back, I go, actually, that gig wasn't that bad. But just at the time, especially when it's, it's new stuff that you've written and you love it. And when an audience just goes, nah, like, it's really heartbreaking. But after a while, you kind of develop a skin to go, especially once you do those same jokes either all around your city or Australia or the world, you go, you know what, those jokes work. If that audience didn't like it, maybe there was something in my demeanour that night, or maybe they just weren't for me. Like, this is something else I often say. You could put Nirvana in front of a Nana Muscuri audience and they probably would say Nirvana was a shit band. Like, comedians for audiences and audience for comedians. Just because you find the audience that wasn't yours doesn't mean you're shit, necessarily.
Yeah.
We've all seen shit comics where you just go, there is no audience for you, you're shit, get off. But, just keep going until you find your groove and you find your bits and pieces.
Yeah, that's a good point. And confidence, I found in my experience anyway, it makes a big difference.
Mm.
Even if you fake the confidence a bit, it doesn't seem to matter what you say sometimes on stage, as long as you're confident, then the audience are there with you.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I think audiences get a bit jack of overconfidence. You know, when you get those...
Mm.
People who strut on stage, they're just like, yeah, I've got this. And we'll see. But equally, I've seen people who've got brilliant material who don't have any confidence, and it really works against them.
It's such a shame.
Yeah, because if you don't think that you're any good, then the audience are like, I paid $20 and you don't think you're any good, so why?
If you're uncomfortable on stage, they'll be uncomfortable watching you.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people who make being uncomfortable part of their act, but...
Well, that's... Yeah.
But
you
know,
can tell it's not.
Yeah, but you know the people you're talking about. You're just like, oh, God, this poor kid doesn't want to be there and he's actually sweating bullets and, that kind of... You go, oh, sweetie, it's okay, hang in there, it'll be fine. That sort of thing I find very cute when you just go, oh.
Do you do much acting work? You mentioned you have an acting agent.
Yeah, bits and pieces. Always makes me giggle the stuff I get sent for. I just go, fuck, really? Okay, righty, I'll have a crack. I seem to be my agency's Hail Mary play, which is a gridiron term where you're down in the last couple of seconds of the clock and your quarterback just throws the ball as far as they can and just it's a Hail Mary. They just hope someone catches it and does something with it. I'm kind of the Hail Mary of my agency where you know, we don't actually have anyone that fits that bill, so just send Julia and she'll make something happen. That's, you know, it's one of those things that, because you go into auditions and you're either being cast or sent along because of your look,
yeah.
In which case you walk in and everyone in the room looks just like you. And the first couple of times I was like, fuck, I didn't think there were people that looked just like me. I walk in, I go, there's big girls with big boobs and curly hair and dark skin everywhere. I'm like, wow, that's what I look like, which is really... There was something hilarious about that. Or you walk into a casting and there is tall and skinny and short and fat and black and white, and you're just like, whoa, this is one of those ones. This is not necessarily an open casting, but they're saying, we want this personality type. We don't care what they look like. So it's always funny when you walk in and go, what's today going to hold?
Yeah.
Always makes me giggle. And what makes me less giggle is how often I go into auditions and they ask you to, here's the lines, but just improv something around it. And I go in and I improv something around it, and the thing I improved made it to the TV commercial, but I did not. Because you don't get paid for that.
Yeah.
You have no idea how many TV commercials I'm watching. I'm like, oh, that was my bit. I'm glad it made it. That's fucking great.
You really should get some money
out of
it.
It's like a $7,000 commercial, and I come on, guys. Set for it. That's wonderful. But,
yeah.
You know, on the other side of that is, you know, I land probably 1 in 5, 1 in 6 commercials that I go for.
That's a good strike rate.
Yeah, yeah, which is, you know, nice little pocket money type thing. So you go, well, you know, you get paid $6,000 to do one day's work.
It's awesome.
You go, okay, so the other ones that I didn't get and my idea made it, you know, swings and roundabouts. Not that I think the advertising industry is suffering from that. I think they're doing fine financially. But yes, and then for legitimate acting, I kind of... just do little bits and pieces here and there. But I quite enjoy that.
Would you like to do skits and things like that?
Yeah, they're fun.
Yeah.
I was in, what was it called? Comedy Inc., which was a TV show from 100 years ago. And, I just started doing comedy. I've been doing about 18 months. And I got all my friends around to watch it because I was in 2 different sketches. And I was so stoked. But they'd hired me on my acting, not on my comedy, because no one had ever heard of me because I'd only been doing it 18 months. But one of the sketches was, so I was in the background of a restaurant scene. That one came on first. My friends were like, oh, look, there you are. Oh, we're so proud. Because I've got real, my friends are beautifully supportive. I'm really lucky. And then I got to the next scene, or the next sketch that I was in, and do you remember Temptation Island? It was a shitty dating TV show.
I think I've heard of it.
And they would put, so they'd put people on an island, like a tropical island, they'd put couples in there, and then they'd put a whole bunch of hot single people of both genders in there, and the hot single people would try and tempt, they would test the relationships of the whoever won that series got their wedding paid for or something. Awful, awful, hideous concept for a TV show, which at the time I thought we were scraping the bottom of the barrel, but then it turned out it got so much worse over the next 15 years. But so this sketch was a piss take of Temptation Island because they were all hot, like smoking hot bodies, bikinis and board shorts, and like, yay, check me out, I'm so fucking spunky. And so this sketch was called Temptation Ireland.
Yeah.
And it was
Ireland.
Yeah, so it was shot in Ireland.
Oh,
in the free,
okay.
But we're all still in board shorts and cozzies and that kind of stuff. But it's freezing cold.
Wow.
And you know, instead of the tropical Hawaiianess, there's this rolling green hills and everyone's fucking shivering and freezing. And so the guy is now, because this is what happens on the actual Temptation Island, is that people would have to pick who they want to go out on another date with or who they were going to spend a night with.
Mm.
And so it gets to the part of the sketch where Ben Oxenbold was actually the guy that was playing, I don't know if you remember him, he's the guy that was in Hey Dad, the one that came out to protect the girl.
Sure.
Yeah, so he's a really good bloke. And smoking hot, which I'm sure he doesn't mind me saying. But he's standing there and he's like been painted blue. We filmed it at Macquarie Uni, which is this uni with great big green rolling hills, but we filmed it on a summer's day of about 35 degrees. We're all sweating our bollocks off and we're meant to be freezing, so they're trying to paint us blue over the sweat because we're so, like, everyone's sweating quite profusely. And I'm in a thank Christ they didn't make me wear a bikini, but I was in like a one piece with a sarong.
Yeah.
They pan down the row of ladies he has to pick from, and there's smoking hot chick, smoking hot chick, smoking hot chick, me, smoking hot chick, smoking hot chick. And then the presenter turns back to Ben Oxenbold and goes, so tell us, Peter, or whatever his name is, who are you going to pick in Temptation Ireland? And Ben Oxenbold, in his very broad Irish accent, goes, I'll take the fat one. She'll keep me warm at night, right? Which is, and I go, ha ha, I look at the skinny bitches and go, stick it. And then the two of us go frolicking off into the sunset together, right? And it's a great little, you know, 30-second sketch. And the fat girl wins at the end of the day. She gets the hot bloke. Well done, fat girl, right?
Yeah.
So we film it in a bajillion degree heat. And it gets to the bit of the TV show, and I see, you know, the what do you call it? The words come up on the screen to say, you know, Temptation Ireland. I say to all my friends in the lounge room, here it is, here's my next one. This is the one that, like, I'm the focus of. And they go, hot chick, hot chick, hot chick. And then it gets to who it should be, me, and it's a completely other girl, like a different big girl.
What?
They reshot my bit. And then smoking hot girl, same line, same everything. They go frolicking off into the sunset. And all my friends just go, either your makeup's really good or that's not you. And I went, it's not me. What the fuck? I was devastated and embarrassed because I had told everyone that I knew that I was going to be on this TV show and whereabouts. So in the end, what they saw was 30 seconds of me in the background of a restaurant scene. But I rang my agent the next day and just went, what the fuck happened there? Like, I was going to use that for my show reel. And he goes, yeah, I was watching and emailed them this morning. Turns out you were fat enough, but you weren't ugly enough. So it wasn't as funny because it was quite believable that you could just score a dude. So we had to
backhand.
So I'm fat enough, but I'm not ugly enough. I guess I'll take that as a compliment. So they had to reshoot it with an ugly chick. And I was like, oh my God, imagine being this poor girl. And
you just done your makeup and make him look ugly.
I was going to say, oh, I can be ugly. I can be ugly. You trust me.
Your character actor.
But it was hilarious at the time. I went, oh, I was so devastated. And then, you know, it was my best mate who went, dude, they said you weren't ugly enough. Take a fucking compliment. I just went, I was completely astounded that they would do, you know, that's, but they were saying the comedy's not there because it's believable. And comedy is about, you know, ridiculousness and that kind of stuff. And I was like, yeah, fucking whatever. And then my agent went, you got paid anyway. I went, yeah, good point.
Yeah. I love ridiculous comedy. I mean, I do improv now. I'm really into that. So I wouldn't mind doing sketches.
Yeah, they're good fun.
Sketches.
Live sketches on stage are great because anything can go wrong. All you need is one person to forget their lines or one person to get a bit fucking rogue and creative and just go off in a direction and you've all got to go with it because, you know,
improv.
That's the rule. You always say yes.
Yep.
Maybe that's why I'm so slutty. I did improv at school. Always say yes. Always say yes.
Accept all offers.
And then it went from always say yes to just hit up that bloke. And that bloke, he doesn't look like he's seen you yet. Go and let him know that you're here. That's what we were joking the other day, and I was telling Jasmine that I don't believe in leagues. You know how you hear people go, oh, he's out of my league, or she's out. I don't believe in any of that. And as if by magic, I have pulled some of the most smoking hot guys that, if I did believe in leagues, were way out of mine. So I refuse to believe in any of that sort of stuff.
That's good. It's good. That means you have confidence, so.
Oh, either that or I'm deluded, but it works for me. Whatever it is, I'll take it.
A lot of women aren't like that, though. We think we're not good enough.
No, I think we also, if someone ever suggests that you're of a particular ilk or you're of, I think we tend to go, oh, okay. Whereas I go, go fuck yourself. I'm going to do precisely what I like, whatever I like.
Break the mold.
I don't know about that. I just think I don't know. I've never really kind of, I'm wired a bit differently in that regard. And I was always a tomboy, so I was always doing something that I went, oh, Julia's just being Julia again. And luckily I was never made to not be Julia.
Well, in that way, that makes you a really good role model.
Oh, well, at least you don't sugarcoat anything.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. I was having a chat to a guy, actually a bloke that I met through Facebook, friend of a friend of a friend, who now we chat all the time. He's a really nice guy. But he said to me, I'm thinking about giving comedy a go, but I've kind of got some skeletons in my closet. And I went, just own them. Just own them.
That's the best way to do comedy.
Oh, because if you, you know...
You can't have shame when you do comedy.
Absolutely. And you can't have anything anyone can use against you because... I mean, they'll hammer you with it. They'll absolutely, you know, oh, did you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas if you've already talked about it on stage, you go, yeah, that was my 2008 festival show. Attention. You know, it's really hard to try to use that, you know, we've got something on you, or, you know, you need to play the game and be the nice, sweet one. Otherwise, you know, this could all go pear-shaped. And you go, go fuck yourself. I've already told the whole world. I did a, there's a Mirabelle Foundation. You guys heard of those guys? They're from Melbourne, and they do every year they do a creative theme. One year it's a calendar, another year it's a cookbook. The year I did it, it was a book, just like a written, you know, little storybook about. It was called Your Mother Would Be Proud, and so they asked comedians and musos and things like that of a story that your mother would either be super proud or she would be so ashamed that she could never find it. But something like that. So some kind of variation on so your mother would be proud. And so I submitted a little story about how I accidentally made a sex tape when I was 18. Oops. And when I say accidentally, totally knew it was all happening. You can't use my face, and you can only, it'll be like 30 seconds long. And I was so daring. And then I started to do comedy when I was 27, and so at 28, my mates went, you need to get that tape back, because if that ever comes out, you're in big trouble. So I went back to the same gentleman that I had still been seeing on and off for all that time and went, I really need to get that tape back. And he's like, oh, that tape's gone, it's dead. I watched it so many times, it's, you know, it was old school VCR, like proper old tape. And I somehow accidentally slipped and fell and ended up making another one.
So you hate it when
they're and then, and my mates had said to me, don't tell him that you're coming around to get the tape, just go around there like you normally would and get the tape back, and we'll all be here at the pub waiting for you. And so when I got to the pub while they were waiting for me, I walked in and they went, where's the tape? And I went, a little bit of an incident. And they went, what do you mean? I went, kind of made another one. And they went, you fucking idiot. Like, it was just, my mates absolutely slaughtered me over it. And it didn't end there. Like, that's not enough. So this is the story that I've submitted for this book. It didn't end there. I then move overseas. And while I'm overseas, American Rosso were doing a radio bit. And the bit, you know how they used to do phone-ins all the time?
Yeah.
And the bit was, have you ever tried to fix something and in an effort to fix it made it worse? And people were ringing going, yeah, I was at my boss's party and I accidentally spilled red wine on the carpet. When I tried to get it out, I made it much worse. And then one of my idiot mates rings in and goes, well, my friend went to go and get a sex tape back, and when she went back to get it, slipped and fell and made another one. And they just went, they just bumped all the other callers and just went, let's keep talking to you for a few minutes. And this friend of mine's really proud of how far I've come in comedy. And she's like, yes, well, she changed my name so it wouldn't be so obvious. And then goes, well, my friend, she's a very, very funny comedian. She's just moved to the UK, you know. She essentially has just said, Sydney-based female comedian who's just moved to the UK. Like, I was the... She may as well just give my address out.
Yeah.
And I just went, oh... So I wake up in the middle of the night with my computer just bing, bing, bing with emails. I'm like, what's going on here? And people emailing me going, did you make a sex tape? And then when you went to get it back, made another one? Because I'm getting... I just heard American Rosso and I was like, what the fuck happened? Like, what? Because I'm in another country and I'm thinking, did the tape get out? Like, how on earth are all these? I literally, I've got half a dozen emails in the space of 10 minutes of people just going, it has to be you, because they said a female comedian from Sydney just moved to London, it has to be you. So I have to ring around my mates back home and go, who said what to who, for Christ's sake? So that's the story that I submitted for Mirabelle. So things like that, you go, you know, if that ever came out, if the tape ever came out, first of all, I was fucking smoking hot at 18 and I was still pretty good looking at 28. So if either of those tape made, I'd be like, yeah, that's me. I was single and fucking a dude who was single, well done me. So there's no shame in it. Yeah. Obviously, I wouldn't want for the tapes to get out, but if they do, you go, yeah, and it's on record. Like, it's everyone already knows I did it. There's no mystery there.
Yeah.
Not massively proud, probably wouldn't do it at 40, but, you know, it happened. It's part of who you are, you move on.
Yeah, exactly. So about being 40, how's that?
Oh, I'm fucking loving it.
Your 40th was so fun.
It was the best one I've ever had. That was the best party I've ever had. I've got a douchebag older brother who used to be this, I say used to be like he's dead. He's not, I just don't talk to him. He could be, that'd be lovely, I don't know. So he, like when I say that, people kind of go, okay, they're close. So he used to be a big drama queen around everyone's birthday. If it wasn't his day, then he'd have a big fight with his girlfriend, or he'd get really drunk the night before and wouldn't turn up to the party. But there was always a massive drama queen on someone else's birthday. So for years and years, I just went, I hate my birthday. I hate birthday parties. I remember one time, I think it might have been my 16th or something like that, and he and two of his friends were going to take a whole bunch of us into the city for a big night out, because, you know, 16's kind of grown up and kind of not, and then he just didn't turn up. And so I've got, you know, 12, 16-year-old girls sitting at my house going, is your brother going to show up? Are we going to go and do this? I think he did show up at like 10 o'clock that night when we were all meant to be heading out at sort of 5. You know, things like that. So just a big, passive-aggressive drama queen. So I've never really enjoyed birthday parties. And then I punted my brother, I don't know, 15 years ago. We haven't spoken for 100 years. And then I got this boyfriend who did exactly the same thing, just got really drama queen-y around my birthday. And I went, what is this? What is this? How do I get two of them in my life? And so once I got rid of him, it took me a few years of going, oh, I'm a bit gun-shy about birthdays, but we've been split up for ages now, so when it came to this birthday, I went, you know what? I reckon I don't have a single drama queen in my circle anymore. I've got really cool people. It's taken me a lot of years to get a really cool core bunch of of people around me. When I say bunch, I was very lucky. There were like 100 people at my birthday.
Wow. Yeah.
And there wasn't a single drama queen there. There wasn't a single person.
Oh, everyone was great.
It was so... And everyone got dressed up. It was a music-themed dress-up party. And everyone went nuts. The band, I hired a band. It was just... And I hired the venue that we do comedy in on a Monday night. So the security knew us and the bar girls knew us. Even the bar girls got dressed up. It was just... I had so much fun. And I had one of those little moments... to myself at about 10:30 that night. I was sitting up on the mezzanine just looking out going, it's a pretty fucking cool party. Everyone's enjoying the band. This is a lot of fun. There's not one douchebag in the room. And there was no one that I'd invited because I had to. You know those parties where you're just like, ugh, I hate that friend of mine's boyfriend, but I had to. Like, there wasn't one single person that I didn't want to be there. I just went, this is pretty damn cool. So I really enjoyed it. And it's, I feel like I've always been 40. I've always been opinionated and loud, but now that I am 40, I'm allowed to be.
So everyone who's 40 is opinionated and loud.
Pretty much. Well, if you're not, if you don't know what you think about the world by the time you're 40, you're fucked.
That's
you're in big trouble.
I mean, I'm in my 30s, and I think I know myself and my opinions on the world a lot better now than when I was in my 20s. And I was so insecure. Worried about what everyone else thought, and they'd say, oh, I don't care what anyone thinks, but I really did care.
Yeah, and you're still trying to find your place.
You just
in the
get
world,
out.
And you're still trying,
it,
you know. Where,
like,
then,
you know what, I don't care anymore.
Then one day you just go, this is who
exactly.
I am. Take it or leave it. If you don't like how I look, fucking look somewhere else.
You like that? Do you agree with that, Tal?
I felt insecure during my teens and my 20s. Now, I still feel like I'm trying to know myself, but I feel like I'm getting to the stage where I don't care so much about what other people think.
Yeah,
I think that's where you feel most free.
What really helped me was having a mental breakdown. That really helped. And in my mid-20s, dropped my bundle completely, went totally bonkers before I started comedy, coincidentally.
Yeah.
And it just, you really...
What triggered
could
that?
You... Oh, heaps and heaps of stuff. It was actually just a... It was... If you ever wanted to believe that the universe had a plan for you, you would have watched me in that 6 months. Where I kept going, no, I'm fine, no, I'm fine. Oh, really, have this. No, I'm fine, no, I'm fine. And then another layer. No, I'm off, for fuck's sake. There's only so much one person can handle.
Yeah.
Totally dropped my bundle. And so you have to rebuild, you know, when your mental health is really challenged like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, almost ended up being sectioned. Like, I was really, really
wow.
troppo. And massively violent at the time, too. So very bad combination.
Yeah.
Especially at my size and weight. Very bad combination.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, totally bonkers. And then... You have to rebuild. You have to rebuild everything in your life and your own personality. So you get a chance to go, actually, that shit was useless. I don't need to bring that with me. And you can just leave a whole bunch of stuff in your past where, you know, if without having had that, it would have been, you actually have to actively shelve that. You have to go, well, I don't want that part of my personality, so I'm going to get rid of that. Whereas a mental breakdown really helped for me. I just went, nah, don't like that. Nah, don't like that. I'm not taking that with me. And it's all been, I used to giggle that. So I went mad at 25.
Yeah.
So I used to giggle that 26 was my first birthday and 27 was my second birthday. You know, so I'm really technically only a teenager still.
Well, they say that sometimes you have to crack in order for some light to shine through.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I cracked wide open.
Yeah.
Dude, it was just
absolutely.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
And unfixable. Like, there was no point. Because, you know, we all know people, especially in this industry, that have got mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are just trying to manage them.
Mm-hmm.
There was no managing it for me. I just lost it all. I completely lost my mind. And there was no, you know, oh, maybe if we just medicate this bit, maybe if we just treat, no, it's done, let's start again. Like, burn to the ground, start again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, technically I just turned 15. So I kind of, that kind of feels about right. Yeah, I know, I was like, yeah, sweet.
Sweet
16,
so.
Yeah, never been kissed. So yeah, in terms of, you know, still trying to find, you know, where you are in the world, it certainly helps to have had to start again, but be able to be, you know, to be old enough to go, okay, which bits do I want to do? That's when my last relationship broke up horribly, like ended really badly, it was one of the first times in my life that I went, oh, I get to choose what kind of ex-girlfriend I'm going to be. I've had this horrible breakup. This guy's done this douchebag thing to me. How am I going to react to that? Rather than knee-jerk reaction, I actually got a chance to go, ooh. Am I the ex-girlfriend that gets all of his stuff, cuts it into a million pieces and mails him back an envelope of confetti every week? Or am I the ex-girlfriend who gets walked all over and go, oh, he must have so many problems for him to treat me like that? Or am I the ex-girlfriend who just goes, you're getting back all your good shit, I'm burning the rest of it, anything else goes to charity, and I'm never speaking to you again? And so I went with that option.
I like that.
Well, I thought it was nice. It could have gone either way, to be fair.
Well, it's getting close to the 1 hour mark. Like,
oh my god.
Yeah. It's been a good chat. Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for the vegan cookies. Never thought I'd hear myself say that phrase before.
I know. You heard
thanks
it
for the
first.
Vegan cookies. You know what they need? Bourbon dipping sauce.
Speaking of bourbon, things like that, this morning I went to my local cafe, Short Black Panther. I don't know if I can get them into
Short
listening
Black
to this,
Panther.
And maybe it's such a good name for
it. It is
cafe.
A cracking name.
And maybe they could sponsor us. We're looking for sponsors every time. But they have Jack Daniel's banana bread. They call it jacked up banana bread.
Oh my
Gotta
God.
Try it.
What time
are they open to? Today they're only open till 12. Otherwise, I'd be like, let's go get some banana
Absolutely.
Bread.
That's what I was like. Let's go.
I should have got some takeout.
Let's pause right now.
And it's got a healthy amount of Jack Daniels in it. And
nice.
It smells amazing. They heat it up and they put this really nice banana honey jam.
I love that you're like all over the veganness and happy to have booze in your banana bread. I could not be more proud.
Isn't Jack Daniels vegan? I think.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We'll go with yes.
Just easier to say.
Being very confident that it's not.
I mean, I'm not vegan as such, but, you know, I try to be healthier. As you know, I've had some health problems last year or so. And so the healthier I eat, the better. So I try to balance it out.
Yeah, I'm a footballer, so I'm allowed to eat whatever the fuck I want. Go, hey, it's training. I'm going to bulk up. I'm the middle linebacker. I'm going to bulk up.
Well,
so
protein.
Yeah, yeah. That's what's it. Literally, you're like, more beer? Yeah, you got to have beer because I'm going to be big. That's what I do.
High protein beer. High protein beer.
My quarterback, who when I'm playing an offense and I protect the quarterback, my quarterback is always going, here, have some more steak. Have some more cake, Julia. Can I get you another beer, Julia? I'm like, this is all right. It's wonderful to be a woman who's being encouraged to be bigger so she's more protective. It's great.
Well, there's nothing worse than anorexia.
Oh, I'm sure there's, you know, everyone's got their own things to bear in that regard, but I quite enjoy the fact that this is the size I am, and now I'm being rewarded for it, not just defending it. It's like, yay, we've got big girls, go, nuts, break through that barrier, go.
Well, it's good to see more confident women who are, like, really comfortable in their body, like, you know, like, so, you know, I could lose some weight, that kind of thing. And the other day, I think I said to you, oh, I'm trying to lose a little bit of weight, and you're like, why?
Yeah, I had this, like, completely perplexed look on my face. I'm like, what? Why?
What if I want to model?
Eat some more and come and join us in footy. Like, I played gridiron for New South Wales, and when we were training, you never, ever heard, oh, some of the receivers have to be a little faster and lighter, so they would kind of be like, oh, I'm going to have to eat well. But the rest of us, who our jobs are to be big and burly and just break through lines. When I say break through barriers, I don't mean like social barriers. I mean actually bust through the defensive line and hit someone. Mm. Like an actual barrier, not a perceived barrier. We'd be like, oh, we need to eat some more. How much protein do you have per meal? Oh, right. Like, there was, you know, that's the only dietary advice, was how to bulk up, how to cut fat and put on muscle and you know, be more of an impact player than just a lard who gets in the way. Like, it's hilarious. I don't hear chicks talk like that too often.
Mm-hmm. Well, for all of our listeners who would like to find out more about your upcoming gigs and follow you on Twitter in a non-stalky way, they can follow you at Julia_Wilson, is that right?
Double underscore.
Yeah. Right, so Julia double underscore
Twitter.
Wilson.
That's where I am.
And can they find you, do you have a Facebook fan page?
Oh, I do, but I never maintain it. Just come find me.
Okay.
It's kind of defeats the purpose
very,
of not being a stalker, doesn't it? I'm quite new to Instagram too. I'm loving that. Yeah, your picture tells 1,000 words.
My Instagram's pretty much just vegan cookies at the moment. Not so much a comedy. And you can find our podcast. We now have a fan page, Woman in Comedy, the podcast. Search us on Facebook. You can find me at The Hot Comedian, both on Twitter and Facebook.
Love it. Love it.
There's a story, but we'll save it for another podcast. But yeah, I used to be in the modelling scene, just a little bit. Didn't quite work out. Older and more cynical. And The Hot Comedian was born. That's pretty much a summary.
And I'm also on Facebook.
Yeah, Tao's also on Facebook. Do you want to spell your name for people?
Tao, Tung Tao. You'll find it.
Nice.
Your T-H-A-O and then the rest should come up.
Yeah, C-A-O is the surname.
Nice.
You're difficult to pronounce name. No, I'm kidding.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. I've had a ball.
Thank you. We'll hopefully have you back too.
Sweet.
All right. And that has been Woman Comedy, the podcast.